His merry band ripped apart this happy land. It's Robin Hood with a switch. He steals from the poor and gives to the rich. The Bushies and the Foxies and the prehistoric Limbaugh. We had a huge surplus and it's gone. We'll be running huge deficits from now on. There are big tax refunds for a few. The rich get richer and the poor get screwed. Robin Bush and his merry band ripped apart this happy land. It's Robin Hood with a switch. He steals from the poor and gives to the rich. The Bushies and the Foxies and the prehistoric Limbaugh. It's Rush and Bush. We've seen 3 million jobs disappear, with poverty levels rising every year. But when those inheritance taxes fall, there'll be a new class of folks who'll never need a job at all. Class warfare.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
With their contracts coming to an end in Iraq, many Indians are heading home to file complaints against the contractors that hired them. Those complaints include not providing adequate drinking water, food, health care, or security. Tens of thousands of foreign contractors are currently participating in the reconstruction for wages that are one-tenth of what U.S. workers would earn. One of the complaints says that many workers were led to believe they would be working in Kuwait City, but then found themselves on a bus to the northern Iraqi city of Mosul. Another says that Hindus were served beef and Muslims were ordered to handle pork. And one night when explosions went off outside the dining facility, while their Western counterparts were provided with protective gear, the Indians had to stand in the open air in their pajamas. India has asked for assistance from the U.S. Defense Department in researching the complaints filed against Kellogg Brown & Root, a subsidiary of Halliburton, but the Army has responded that that responsibility rests with the company.
For only the third time in Mexico's history, the voters sent a woman to the governor's mansion last week, and she attributes her victory to migration. In Mexico, where millions of citizens travel back and forth across the border seeking jobs, women have gained more independence and political clout as men have left seeking work. In the state Emilia Garcia won, Zacatecas, half of the population live in the United States.
A strike that would have shut down the nation's largest port complex has been averted thanks to an agreement reached this weekend. Clerical workers at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach threatened to walk off the job, and 4,000 longshoremen who worked the docks had promised to not cross their picket lines. The workers were concerned that new technology upgrades would put their jobs in jeopardy. The agreement gives the workers a no-layoff clause, a pay raise, and improved retirement benefits.
The brokerage Wall Street firm of Morgan Stanley agreed to pay $54 million on Monday to avoid a sex discrimination trial brought by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The EEOC claims Morgan Stanley engaged in a pattern of discrimination against its female employees, paying them less and passing them over for promotions. Women were expected to testify that they were not given raises for taking maternity leave and battered with sexist comments. Even though the company is setting up a $40 million claims fund for women alleging discrimination, it denies all charges.
Here's today's Workers' Independent News Service Dow Bob Report. I'm Jesse Russell. With claims of heightened disclosure, the 30 largest companies on the Dow Jones Industrial Average have significantly expanded their annual reports to shareholders over the last 5 years, growing at an average of 13% per year to a median length that now runs past 200 pages per corporate report. Yet that doesn't necessarily mean the reports are more informative. One independent research firm looked at 120 major companies and found only a third actually included understandable information that accurately portrayed the company's bottom line.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now Bush says we're in recovery. And after a year, you finally land another job. And you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? Well, Ed, we're being misled.
The Timken Company, based in Canton, Ohio, makes steel and other industrial products, and last year, it was the proud recipient of a visit by His Eminence, George W. Bush. The Prez had traveled to Ohio, a state that's up for grabs in this fall's election, to hype the value of all the tax giveaways he's passed for the rich. He went to Canton to claim that those giveaways would trickle down from the rich to create jobs for middle-class America, and he needed a good visual for his televised speech. Timken's factory was the perfect made-for-TV backdrop. A crowd of Timken's hard-hatted blue-collar workers was dutifully assembled for Bush. The boss man, Tim Timken himself, was on stage beaming with pride and nodding in approval at George's every sentence. Why wouldn't he? Tim has long been a major financial backer of both Bush presidents. Now, fast forward to May of this year. Just months after George's highly publicized rooster strut in Canton, Tim announced that he was closing three of his U.S. factories, eliminating 1,300 jobs, and moving production to low-wage centers elsewhere, including overseas. Curiously, there was no national media coverage of this development, which made a mockery of Bush's earlier political posturing. What's to happen to the workers who were made to serve as props for George's pitch about the power of trickle-down economics? I have no idea what I'm going to do, says Scott Anderson, 41 years old and a 23-year loyal worker at Timken. There are just no good job opportunities left in this community. Scott added that he now couldn't pay for the college education of his kids. I want a better America, as my parents did for me, he says. Ironically, a Timken spokesman coldly replied, it's a business issue, not a political issue. This is Jim Hightower saying he's dead wrong about that. By stiffing America's middle class, Bush and Tim Timken are playing with political dynamite.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill six eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, beaming down from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and broadcasting on radio stations from North Carolina to California. Last night, I have a bit of information, a bit of news to share with you, and before I get to it, it's going to take about, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes before I get to it, because it's just, it's one of those things that when I first heard this, I felt like I'd been kicked in the teeth, and so I want to put it in the appropriate context. Last night, Louise and I went to see the new movie Control Room, and this, in my opinion, is a more important movie than Fahrenheit 9/11. Fahrenheit 9/11, of course, you know, talks about, you know, the malfeasance of the Bush administration and how they're cozy with the Saudis, and the Saudis have been feeding Islamic fundamentalism, and you really start to get it, I suppose, when you watch Fahrenheit 9/11, that the idea that Al Qaeda and Osama bin Laden and these Islamic fundamentalists have attacked us because they hate our freedoms is nonsense. You don't, I mean, imagine a bunch of bearded guys sitting around a cave in Afghanistan going,
Look at those Americans. They're free to vote for whoever they want. Oh, we can't have that. That's terrible. Those Americans, they can drink Coca-Cola and eat at McDonald's. Look at the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition. We've got to bomb them. We've got to stop them from doing this. No. No. Osama bin Laden laid it out very clearly when he declared war on us back in the 90s. He said, it's your foreign policy. He said he was attacking the United States. He was declaring war on the United States. This was before the Cole bombing and before 9/11. He said, he was declaring war on the United States because we had the temerity, the audacity to put soldiers who were not Muslim, women who were driving and were not veiled, men who were drinking alcohol on the holy soil of Saudi Arabia. That was his demand. Get out of Saudi Arabia. Bill Clinton ignored it. George Bush, about 6 months ago, actually removed the last of our troops from Saudi Arabia once we had started establishing a base in Iraq. But this is where you get into the out of the frying pan into the fire scenario. Because by attacking Iraq now, you've got more than just Osama upset with us. We've got the entire Arab world looking at us going, you know, this looks an awful lot like the United Kingdom in 1920 when they colonized Iraq, or the Russians in Afghanistan. I mean, this just doesn't look right. And the movie Control Room asks the question, is America radicalizing or stabilizing the Arab world? It's basically the entire movie. It's a documentary, and it's about Al Jazeera. And basically, you know, they follow the top brass of Al Jazeera, as it were, around, and a whole bunch of, you know, people who worked there through the Iraqi war, through a period of maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks. And it is absolutely shocking to see us from the point of view of a group of people who believe themselves to be impartial secular Arabs. In fact, the managing director of Al Jazeera goes into this long rant in the movie about how much he wants to trade in the Arab nightmare for the American dream. His goal is to make enough money. This is the guy who's running the network, to make enough money at Al Jazeera that he can send his children to an American college in the hopes that they can stay here after they graduate. These people are not anti-American. And it's just a stunning thing. So anyhow, before the movie started, there were these clips, you know, and there was one, previews of Coming Attractions. And there was one about a movie that's about surfers in the 1950s. And there's this kid in this old clip where he says, and he's talking about us, you know, surfing on a 70-foot wave. And this was, you know, people just beginning to do this in the 1950s, a brand new thing. And he said, you get up there and he said, it's so terrifying. He said, at one point, he said he just concluded, okay, well, I'm going to try it. He said, today seems like a pretty good day to die. Which reminded me about the story of the Crow Indians that General Custer had enlisted. He had taken their women and children and held them in a stockade and said he's going to murder them if they didn't work for him as scouts. It was a little group, I believe it was six Indians. There are variations on this story. But it's, you know, widely told, particularly in Native American communities. And these six Indians who were stuck with this job rode up over the hill the night before the day of Custer's last stand and saw thousands, tens of thousands of Sioux who had amassed there. And they came back to Custer and they said, we're going to get slaughtered. And Custer said, nah, these guys, they're ignorant savages. They don't have guns. They got bows and arrows. Don't worry about it. In fact, he even split his army and sent part of his army down to the Sioux village, the unprotected village, because now he knew all the warriors are here, right? He sent part of his army down there to the unprotected village where they burned it and they killed the women and children. He thought this was going to demoralize the Indians, the Sioux. But the Crow, who were his scouts, knew better. And they went out in the forest that night and they put on their death paint and sang their death song. And the next morning when they mounted up to ride into battle with Custer, as they knew they had to do or their families would be slaughtered,
Custer was well known for this sort of thing. One of them is said to have said to the others, "Come on, men, today is a good day to die." Now, the guy who told me this story is a Native American who is distantly related to one of these guys. His first name is Ari. I don't want to put his last name on the air without his permission. And he told me this story, and he said, "Is today a good day for you to die?" And I said, "I don't think so." And he said, "Well, call me when it is." And it was kind of one of those offhand remarks, but you know, it got under my skin. And over the course of the next couple of weeks, I thought, you know, what kind of unfinished business do I have? And so, I called up my parents and I thanked them for being my parents. And I called up each of my kids and I said, you know, I want to apologize for anything I've screwed up, you know, as a parent. I called Tim Underwood, my publisher, for my first 80 e-books. And just said, you know, is everything square between us? You know, and he said, "What are you doing? Are you going through AA? Are you in the fifth step?" And I didn't realize that this is, you know, part of AA. And I said, "No, I'm not. Just, you know." So anyhow, after a couple of weeks, I called up Ari, my friend, the Native American who was related to one of these Indians who died with Custer. And I said, "Okay, I think today's a good day to die." And he said, "Good. Then now you can live fully because you have no fear of dying." And that was the aha for me. Okay. In fact, it was interesting. I'm a pilot, and I'd been in a couple of near airplane crashes, both as a pilot twice and on commercial airlines. I'd been on a plane that was struck by lightning that started to fall out of the sky. I was on another plane that was nearly in a mid-air collision. My son was actually in an air crash where you know, one guy died. They foamed the runway. It was just a terrible, terrible. So anyhow, I'd get a little paranoid on airplanes, and I fly a lot. And right after I went through this little exercise, I'm sitting on a plane with Louise, and we're about to take off, and she reaches over and, you know, something to the effect of, you know, "How you doing?" And I said, I'm fine. Today's a good day to die." And she just, her eyes get buggy. "You know, what?" And I said, "Yeah." So I told her the story about Ari. And which raises the question, you know, is it a good cause for America's sons and daughters to die in Iraq? And about the nature of fear in the United States. And I wanted to lay out that setup about the nature of fear in the United States, because fear is something that, on the one hand, the terrorists, Al-Qaeda, have been playing like a violin, and on the other hand, so has this administration. And now comes the news. And this, you haven't heard this on the news yet. Odds are you will very shortly, because Larry Klayman, the founder of Judicial Watch, the organization that sued Bill Clinton over Jennifer Flowers and led to Clinton's impeachment, the guy who sued Dick Cheney over his energy commission and got those documents released showing that Cheney was involved in, you know, with Enron in planning the Iraq war back in March of 2001. Larry Klayman, I called him this morning, because I've been calling around to various sources saying, is it true that under the Patriot Act, the president can suspend elections without the permission of Congress and the Supreme Court, which is what the War Powers Act of 1947 required? And I got a surprise answer from Larry. I want to play, with his permission, I want to play for you a little bit of my interview with him. Here we go.
Tom, there is a not-so-close secret going around Washington these days that the government has information that multiple nuclear devices are in the United States, that they will likely be used before September 11th, excuse me, before the Freudian slip, before the elections, and that this is the seriousness of the situation. And, you know, what was interesting the other day, I was watching C-SPAN, interesting and frightening, and you had Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer, the two senators from New York, on there, and they were talking about how New York had not received its share of funding, which would go to detect any nuclear weapons that were smuggled into the state, expressing their outrage, the Bush administration, obviously for political purposes. But, you know, the interesting twist was that the press then said, well, do you think that the president and the Republicans are wagging the dog here to divert attention from the war in Iraq and their political problems, as this reporter saw it? And Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer said, no, absolutely not. The threat is real. So they had an opportunity to slam the president, which they never passed that opportunity up some, and they didn't use it.
Yeah.
And that, to me, confirmed these rumors that are out there, that are more than rumors, they are based on reliable sources, that in fact, the United States does believe we're going to be hit with a nuclear attack before the election.
This is rather serious stuff. I really debated and agonized about whether even to talk about it on the air this morning, frankly. And it doesn't mean that it's true, of course. I mean, you know, Larry Klayman has his own political agenda. He's running for the Senate from Florida. I'll play a little more of my interview with him after the upcoming break here. But I have done a little bit of digging with a few contacts I have in Washington, D.C., and I haven't found anybody in official Washington who will deny this. Now, certainly nobody is going to confirm it. Nobody. But what, you know, is this what has sparked all this discussion about the president suspending elections? What is an appropriate response to America, from America, by America, if we get hit with another serious terrorist attack? I mean, these are serious questions, setting aside partisanship and party politics for the moment. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually means to the progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Hello, trouble. Come on in. You talk about...
Well, maybe not.
Where in the world you been?
I'd frankly rather not have trouble. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
Hello, trouble.
1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Larry Klayman, running for the United States Senate, claimansenate.com, I believe, is his website. Of course, the founder of Judicial Watch, saying that it's an open secret in Washington, D.C. He said, learned this yesterday, that there are, he says, the rumor goes, and it's important to, you know, put all these qualifiers on here, right? But, you know, imagine if we had been talking about airplanes and box cutters a few months before 9/11. He says that the rumor is that there are already several suitcase-sized nuclear devices inside the United States, and they're going to be set off apparently at the same time, apparently for, you know, maximum effect, and that this is the subtext to the discussion that is going on the one hand about, you know, the Tom Ridge coming out and saying, you know, time to be afraid. By the way, we can't give you any details. And we're not going to raise the terror alert. Go figure. And on the other hand, the administration talking about, do we suspend elections in the event of a strike against the United States? And the two really larger issues here, in my mind, and this was just really nailed for me last night when I saw this movie Control Room, which you've just got to go see if it's available near you, which is the, you know, chronicling Al Jazeera, is when you think back to 9/11 when the United States was hit, they held a candlelight vigil in Tehran, Iran. I mean, around the world, across the Arab world, everybody was with us. The entire planet was with us. If we get hit again, big time, is the entire planet going to be with us this time? And to what extent is this adventure into Iraq? You know, we had a caller yesterday who says, well, you know, we need to have a presence in that area. Oh, yeah? Well, you know, you could say yes, because we have declared our right to have SUVs. Right, that's a God-given right of Americans. And we've got to import 25% of our oil from the Middle East, 50% of our total oil, half of that from the Middle East. And therefore, it's in our interest to nail it. You know, if we just increased fleet mileage on automobiles in the United States by 5 miles per gallon, we wouldn't need any of that oil from the Middle East. And yet, we're there. Our young men and women are dying, and we are managing to really anger the Arab world. 1-866-889-8894. We're going to take a call or two here real quickly. Dave, this is Christopher in Santa Fe. Hey, Christopher, what's up?
Hey there. Just like to start off, I've spent a lot of time in the Middle East. I've worked in countries all the way from Morocco. Well, not just the Middle East, but Islamic countries all the way from Morocco to Malaysia. And I think that it's important for everybody to understand that trying to classify Muslims one way or another is like trying to classify Christians. I mean, you go all the way from the Pope in Rome to, you know, some very, very fundamentalist things in the American South. And, you know, it's a wide range. And, you know, it's absolutely correct. I agree with you that it's American policy that a lot of them disagree with. But I think it's important to recognize that there's a horrible genocide going on between Muslim Arabs in the Sudan in the north and some animists in the south of Sudan.
Yeah.
And I think that it's important to recognize that
Christopher, you got a good point there. I've got to ask you to hold on for just a second. We've got to take a break here, and we'll pick you up on the other side of this break. It's a Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour. What's the appropriate response of we the people of the United States? How would the world respond if the United States got hit again in a 9/11 fashion? What can we do to prevent that sort of thing from happening? Are we doing enough? What kind of problems are we causing in the world? 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
With their contracts coming to an end in Iraq, many Indians are heading home to file complaints against the contractors that hired them. Those complaints include not providing adequate drinking water, food, health care, or security. Tens of thousands of foreign contractors are currently participating in the reconstruction for wages that are one-tenth of what U.S. workers would earn. One of the complaints says that many workers were led to believe they would be working in Kuwait City, but then found themselves on a bus to the northern Iraqi city of Mosul. Another says that Hindus were served beef and Muslims were ordered to handle pork. And one night when explosions went off outside the dining facility, while their Western counterparts were provided with protective gear, the Indians had to stand in the open air in their pajamas. India has asked for assistance from the U.S. Defense Department in researching the complaints filed against Kellogg Brown & Root, a subsidiary of Halliburton, but the Army has responded that that responsibility rests with the company.
For only the third time in Mexico's history, the voters sent a woman to the governor's mansion last week, and she attributes her victory to migration. In Mexico, where millions of citizens travel back and forth across the border seeking jobs, women have gained more independence and political clout as men have left seeking work. In the state Emilia Garcia won, Zacatecas, half of the population live in the United States.
A strike that would have shut down the nation's largest port complex has been averted thanks to an agreement reached this weekend. Clerical workers at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach threatened to walk off the job, and 4,000 longshoremen who worked the docks had promised to not cross their picket lines. The workers were concerned that new technology upgrades would put their jobs in jeopardy. The agreement gives the workers a no-layoff clause, a pay raise, and improved retirement benefits.
The brokerage Wall Street firm of Morgan Stanley agreed to pay $54 million on Monday to avoid a sex discrimination trial brought by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The EEOC claims Morgan Stanley engaged in a pattern of discrimination against its female employees, paying them less and passing them over for promotions. Women were expected to testify that they were not given raises for taking maternity leave and battered with sexist comments. Even though the company is setting up a $40 million claims fund for women alleging discrimination, it denies all charges.
Here's today's Workers' Independent News Service Dow Bob Report. I'm Jesse Russell. With claims of heightened disclosure, the 30 largest companies on the Dow Jones Industrial Average have significantly expanded their annual reports to shareholders over the last 5 years, growing at an average of 13% per year to a median length that now runs past 200 pages per corporate report. Yet that doesn't necessarily mean the reports are more informative. One independent research firm looked at 120 major companies and found only a third actually included understandable information that accurately portrayed the company's bottom line.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Boy, the bumper music is appropriate to the topic, I guess. 26 and a half minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Larry Klayman of Judicial Watch, currently candidate for the United States Senate in Florida. I'll get to that, his website. I mean, it's only fair to give people credit. A notorious conservative crank, but also, you know, he's dug out some interesting things. Says there are suitcase nuclear weapons in the United States, and they're going to be set off in some big cities between now and the elections. What are the consequences of this? Could it be the right-wing spin, of course, is suspend the elections. Don't let what happened in Spain happen here. What happened in Spain? What happened in Spain was the number one, of course, the socialists who won the election right after the bombing of the train in Madrid were, you know, most of the polls showed they were going to win anyway, number one. But it was only by a point or two, and they ended up winning by 3 or 4 or 5 points. But number two, the people of Spain, when that bombing happened, said, hey, you know, these guys lied us into a war along with Bush in Iraq. We managed to anger the Arab world by invading a country that wasn't a threat to anybody. We're looking like occupiers. We're looking like imperialists. And we're just not up for this kind of leadership anymore. They haven't protected us. They haven't protected the homeland. They've alienated the rest of the world, particularly the Arab world, which is has this kind of radical component within it. And these people are fighting back, you know, are kicking back at us. And it's really a fight that we don't want to have with them. And would the American people say the same thing? Would they say, you know, George Bush has not led us; he's misled us. You know, he's cut back on money for Homeland Security, blah, 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 blah. And therefore, Bush would lose the election. Now, see, this is one scenario. This is the scenario that the conservatives are worried about. Bush would lose the election, and therefore, Bush is going to suspend the election. Is that what's going to happen? Or would it be that the rally around thing would happen? A couple of bombs go off. You know, disasters in a few cities. George Bush rises to the occasion. He looks like the strong commander-in-chief and leader. You know, he gets out his bullhorn, and suddenly all of America is behind him. Even John Kerry has to say nice things about him. After all, we're under attack, and he wins handily. And he gets to decide whether or not to suspend the elections. 1-866-889-8894, your thoughts. We were talking with Christopher in Santa Fe. Christopher, you were going to make a point there.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to say I agree with you completely. I was in Tehran in 1975, and it doesn't surprise me at all, knowing the Iranian people as I do, that they would have held a candlelight vigil. That's precisely what they would do. And I'll tell you one other thing. You're absolutely right. We're not doing enough because we could be the peacemakers. I was also in Egypt, in Cairo, in 1977, just not that long after Henry Kissinger did his shuttle diplomacy and managed to make peace between, or facilitate peace between Israel and Egypt. And you know how you go to a lot of countries, and it's very traditional to have a picture of the president or the leader hanging on the wall of all the shops and all that sort of thing?
Right.
And there were pictures of Henry Kissinger everywhere in Cairo. And I couldn't buy a cup of tea for myself in that town for an entire 3 weeks. I had people come out and hugging me, saying, thank God, you know, for America to help make the peace. We're not losing any more sons. And, you know, come in into my shop and have a cup of tea. And that's the way the Middle East was years ago.
Yeah, I had a very similar experience. Louise and I were in Cairo the week that Anwar Sadat was shot. Number one, that was pretty shocking. I mean, you know, they went to martial law immediately. The traffic lights weren't working. They put up these, you know, everywhere you went, you'd see sandbags and machine gun emplacements because they were expecting, Mubarak thought that there was going to be a military coup. He thought that the military was going to try and take over. It was going to be a Pakistan scenario.
Yep.
And they were scared to death. And wherever we and see, this was also everybody was, you know, very pro-American. Now, at the same time, the last time that we were in Egypt was, I think, 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, November, and either 2 or 3 years ago, and it was the year after or it might have been 2 years after, the big slaughter of tourists down in Luxor.
Luxor,
And we went down there. We were right there on the spot where all these people were machine gunned to death. And everybody was like, you know, thank God you're back. You know, Americans are, you know, of course, they want tourist money. But you know, there really was this very pro-American position, posture, you know, point of view. This actually, it had to have been 3 years ago because it was the this was before 9/11. In fact, it must have been 4 years ago. It was right before 9/11 that we went.
Well, it was the same thing with me. It was 3 years ago. I was in Bahrain and I was having lunch with a Palestinian and a Pakistani that all worked with us. And you know, fundamentally, one of them just said, "Well, you know, you're American. Have you ever really been in a mosque?" And I said, yeah, I've been in the Muhammad Ali Mosque in Cairo. So he didn't believe me, so he asked me some questions about it. And they invited me to worship services the next day.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's excellent point, Christopher. Thank you for calling and making it. I got to move along here.
Sure.
But, you know, well said. I mean, you know, basically the United States has been a friend or been perceived as a friend by most of the Arab world until George Bush. And up to and including through the 9/11 period, until George Bush decided to invade Iraq. I mean, even when we invaded Afghanistan, we still had much, if not most, of the Arab world with us. And then, you know, it's like you've been attacked by Canada, so what do? You declare war on Mexico. Then we decided to invade Iraq, which had nothing to do with 9/11, had nothing, and everybody in the Arab world knew that. They all knew that. 1-866-889-8894. Joe in Provo, Utah is on the line. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Great story, by the way, on It's a Good Day to Die.
Thank you.
Good story. Well, I tell you, I've spent a lot of time in Indian country, too, done a couple of walks with them across the country. And I think the biggest thing that we've got to work on in this country is this fear. And I look at it not just in terms of this issue, but in our politics, you know. I mean, I know you don't like Ralph Nader too much, but... You know, I'm running for U.S. Senate, and I'm running an independent program. And people are in fear, and they want to gravitate to one or two parties. We got to get away from that. We've got to hear all the voices. You know, there's a lot of voices of reason. One of mine, for me, my issue that I'm bringing to the table when I get out, because I'm running for U.S. Senate out in Utah, and I'm saying, look, you know, the bottom line is we're going to deal with the truth. And the truth, first truth we're going to deal with is we're on Indian country. This is Indian land.
Mm-hmm.
And until we deal with that right there, we're living, that fear has propagated for the last 200-something years, and it continues. And until we go
it's
back
like
and start
dealing with our own shadow self, as it were.
Yeah, that's right, that's right.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing. Joe, thanks for the comment. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
This is the thing. I mean, we have to confront some really potentially horrible realities, I think, in the world right now. Let me just share with you. The rest is just another minute and a half here of my interview with Larry Klayman. I said, you know, what's the response going to be if nuclear bombs actually go off in our cities? And his response.
Yes, well, the response would be that the president would use his emergency powers if this occurred close to the election and declare martial law and suspend the election. That would be the logical response, that he would have to do that. He would have no choice at that point because the country would be attacked.
Yeah,
and that obviously is something that we all pray will never happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is an area. And what are your thoughts on, Larry, what this administration has done to prepare for or prevent this sort of thing up to this point? Good one.
Well, everybody bears responsibility for it. I wrote a book called Fatal Neglect, The Government's Continuing Failure to Protect American Citizens from Terrorists. And I pointed out that the Homeland Security Department was just basically rearranging government. It didn't solve the problem. And it is true that we need to do more, allocate more resources on an emergency basis to protect the country from Homeland Security. Here in Florida, where our money for the U.S. Senate, we have 8,100 miles of coastline. We are very close. I myself live 1,000 yards from the port of Miami. You can bring anything into the port, nuclear weapons and all. And there she goes. And we do need to allocate more money. I was in a debate recently with one of my opponents, Mel Martinez, who the Washington elite establishment are trying to push through here. And they asked the question. He answered it first. And he said, was there enough money allocated for Florida? And, of course, this is exemplary of the rest of the country. And he said, absolutely not. And I said, well, Mr. Martinez, you were on the cabinet. You were sitting there with the president. you represented Florida. Why didn't you make sure we got more money? And he really had no response. He blamed Congress. But, of course, Congress appropriates the money in chunks, and the administration decides how to spend it.
Yeah.
So Congress has not appropriated enough money. Instead, we busted the budget by $7.5 trillion.
Yeah, see, and he continues along these lines. In fact, I'll continue with it. But which do you want, America? Tax cuts for the rich and huge deficits, or homeland security? Now, of course, the conservatives are going to spin it as, which do you want, Social Security and Medicare or homeland security? Because, you know, we're not going to give up our tax cuts for the rich after all. You know, that's awesome. Well, in fact, as Klayman, you know, then kind of puts on his conservative hat and goes back to the party line.
We're short on money.
Yeah.
Because we're doing social giveaways to people when we need, you know, like the Medicare bill, which is subsidizing the drug company, when we need to spend money on Homeland Security. So this is a valid criticism.
See, this is, you know, the Medicare bill, which is subsidizing the drug company. Yeah, it's, sometimes I'm really amazed and impressed. You know, on the one hand, you know, okay, here's a guy who's actually a conservative who really believes in his principles, and yet at the same time he keeps slipping into this kind of partisan speak. I have a grudging admiration for his worldview.
Both sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
And frankly, it shows a bankruptcy of Republican and Democrat leadership and why we need new leadership in the Senate. And that's why I'm running. And if people want to support me, my website is claymansenate.com, KLAYMAN Senate.com. I will be
there
that kind of leader.
Great. ClaymanSenate.com. Larry, thank you very much. Yeah. So that's... Anyhow, that was my interview with Larry Klayman. 1-866-889-8894. Your thoughts on this. Dave in Humboldt County, California is on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Tom, for many of us, you are such a refreshing breath here. Your intellect, your logic, your objectivity is so much appreciated. We are being deceived at so many levels by both the government officials, I believe, and their spin doctors on most of the talk radio. Still, I'm convinced there are places none of us want to go. Reality sometimes just gets too ugly. But I think, as a fact, this nation has some very elaborate, very sophisticated military defenses. We have the most advanced of electronics, radars. We have fighter jets that can get anywhere, scrambled in a moment's notice to get anywhere. And yet, we had 9/11, and I have to go with the logic I'm studying in this book, The New Pearl Harbor. The aerial assaults of this type could never happen unless somehow all of these defenses were told, stand down and permit it to happen. If they didn't, it would have been stopped.
Yeah. Dave, you know, I understand that, and I understand your viewpoint, you know, that this was a conspiracy on the part of the Bush administration to the 9/11, you know, that they either let it happen or even played some role in it. And
I don't want to see that, but I'm forced to.
Well, you know, I understand that's your point of view, and I'm not willing to say that that's not true. What I am willing to say is that I'm definitely not convinced of that. So, you know, for me, but it's also ancient history in a way at the moment when we're confronted with somebody who, in my mind, has some relative credibility coming out and saying, hey, it's an open secret in Washington, D.C., that there are several nuclear devices that have already been imported into the United States in major U.S. cities that are ready to go off. Dave, you're a psychologist. Is this the sort of thing, A, that I should be talking about on the radio? B, what kind of response do you think Americans will have if we, God forbid, you know, some awful disaster like this happens?
I think if we have a psychopath in the White House, if we have a team of psychopaths, the secret to solving problems, to dealing with reality, is seeing reality clearly for what it is. As much as we don't want to see it, as much as we want to stick our head in the sand and say, no, he's just an inept dummy who made some bad choices, we have psychopaths actively doing what's happening tonight.
Well, I would argue, frankly, just to be precise, that you could probably build a good case that Cheney and Bush are sociopaths, but psychopaths is pushing it, don't you think?
Well, that's the new term. The term sociopath was ruled out by politicians that described them too accurately, but tonight PBS will be airing something you'll want to see.
Yeah.
It's the plans that Bechtel and Halliburton have for controlling the water of the
planet.
This
is Thirst, yeah, the documentary called Thirst, right?
Yeah. It's something about the nature of the people that have taken control of this country that now own our White House, and we got to see that reality or we will not deal with it accurately.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Dave, thanks for the call, and thanks for your thoughts on this. And Dave really raises the issue. I mean, I would feel, frankly, if we were attacked and attacked in some truly horrific way by Al-Qaeda or anybody, for that matter. I mean, you know, even the Russia decides to throw a missile at us. Right? I mean, which is what, when I was a kid, when I was a child in the 1950s in elementary school, I remember the alarm going off in school, you know, ring, 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 and we would all dive under our desks and put our, and there was a position that they had taught us where you put your thumbs in your ears and close the ear canal, you know, the little flap over your ear, and you put your fingers over your eyes so that you are not deafened by the explosion and blinded by the flash. And we did that, you know, a couple times a year. From the time I was 6 years old and, you know, in kindergarten, first grade, until probably, well, frankly, I don't remember, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, something like that. I mean, we did that regularly. They were called the duck and cover drills. And, you know, we thought the Soviets were going to get us. So, you know, in a way, this isn't really confronting anything new, or it's not confronting anything that Americans haven't confronted before in terms of fear. But what if it actually happens? Would that be the sort of thing that Americans would stand up and say, okay, call off the elections, George. Just be imperious Rex. I don't think so. 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. A new study published in the Journal of Health Affairs shows that registered nurses, like truck drivers, airline pilots, and doctors, make more mistakes when they work longer than 12 hours at a time. Kalia Ramirez speaks with the spokesperson for the California Nurses Association.
The study shows that RNs working 12 and a half hours and more are three times more likely to commit an error than nurses who work less than 8.5 hours. The study also shows that the risk to patients grows exponentially when RNs are forced to work shifts of 16, 20, and 24 hours. The research was led by nursing educators at the University of Pennsylvania and the Nursing College at Michigan's Grand Valley State University. Liz Jacobs, RN, a spokesperson for the California Nurses Association, the CNA, says that patient falls are a problem when nurses are tired, but
medication errors are by far the most common error when you're tired and you're trying to calculate. Look at small writing to make sure that the patient's name matches up with the name that's on the medication. Also getting medications in a timely manner, getting pain medications. Those are the kind of things that are the most prevalent when a nurse is fatigued.
Jacobs says the CNA thinks mandatory overtime is unnecessary.
We believe that mandatory overtime is poor planning.
In a press release welcoming the study, CNA Executive Director Roseanne DeMauro said the nurses' union had successfully negotiated tough bans on mandatory overtime at some 165 healthcare facilities in California. The study is published in the journal Health Affairs. More results, including reports on nurses' caffeine consumption, will be published in the fall. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Kelly Ramirez.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
15, there's still time for you. Time to buy and time to lose.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. What should be our response if the United States is hit hard between now and the elections? I am absolutely of the opinion that the election should continue. Whether George Bush uses it in grandstands and wins in a landslide, or whether the people look at the last, at least the last 2 years in particular, of Bush's foreign policy and say, this guy has basically brought this about this guy has so alienated the rest of the world that they're not going to be with us on this. And has just, you know, has turned American foreign policy into a recruiting poster for Saddam Hussein, or for Osama bin Laden. See, they've done it to me. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Bob in Washington State's on the line. Hey, Bob, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm retired from the Navy. I was a nuclear weapons technician. And I just wanted to throw a little light on the reality of that happening and how it would manifest itself. You're talking... A suitcase nuclear weapon would be equivalent to a tactical nuclear weapon, mm-hmm. not a strategic nuclear weapon. And it wouldn't end up being a city-destroying catastrophe. It would certainly be a catastrophe.
Right, it would take out like 20 square blocks, and most of its impact would be hysteria, right, around radiation.
Yeah. If you set off a tactical nuclear weapon at a street corner in downtown Manhattan that was full of skyscrapers, you wouldn't wipe out 20 city blocks. No way. I mean, all you have to do is look at Ground Zero at Hiroshima. I've stood on it before, and it didn't do that.
Yeah.
But still, I just want to end by saying I despise George Bush, and if a bunch of them went off,
You still there? I think we've lost you there.
I just wanted to end by saying I despise George Bush, and if something like that happened, where a handful of those things went off, I can only say that I know where I would want one of them to be.
Oh, God forbid. God forbid. You know, let's not even go there, Bob. But thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And, you know, a good point. This is going to be more shock and awe. And Shelby makes the point, you know, where do these kinds of devices come from? Mostly Russia. And it was, you know, the Clinton administration started this program, let's buy back nukes from Russia. George Bush said, no, we're not going to do that. We've got to have tax cuts. We can't afford to buy back. We can't afford to help the Russians decommission their nuclear weapons or their nuclear facilities. And so guess what? This stuff is out there. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
With their contracts coming to an end in Iraq, many Indians are heading home to file complaints against the contractors that hired them. Those complaints include not providing adequate drinking water, food, health care, or security. Tens of thousands of foreign contractors are currently participating in the reconstruction for wages that are one-tenth of what U.S. workers would earn. One of the complaints says that many workers were led to believe they would be working in Kuwait City, but then found themselves on a bus to the northern Iraqi city of Mosul. Another says that Hindus were served beef and Muslims were ordered to handle pork. And one night when explosions went off outside the dining facility, while their Western counterparts were provided with protective gear, the Indians had to stand in the open air in their pajamas. India has asked for assistance from the U.S. Defense Department in researching the complaints filed against Kellogg Brown & Root, a subsidiary of Halliburton, but the Army has responded that that responsibility rests with the company.
For only the third time in Mexico's history, the voters sent a woman to the governor's mansion last week, and she attributes her victory to migration. In Mexico, where millions of citizens travel back and forth across the border seeking jobs, women have gained more independence and political clout as men have left seeking work. In the state Emilia Garcia won, Zacatecas, half of the population live in the United States.
A strike that would have shut down the nation's largest port complex has been averted thanks to an agreement reached this weekend. Clerical workers at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach threatened to walk off the job, and 4,000 longshoremen who worked the docks had promised to not cross their picket lines. The workers were concerned that new technology upgrades would put their jobs in jeopardy. The agreement gives the workers a no-layoff clause, a pay raise, and improved retirement benefits.
The brokerage Wall Street firm of Morgan Stanley agreed to pay $54 million on Monday to avoid a sex discrimination trial brought by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The EEOC claims Morgan Stanley engaged in a pattern of discrimination against its female employees, paying them less and passing them over for promotions. Women were expected to testify that they were not given raises for taking maternity leave and battered with sexist comments. Even though the company is setting up a $40 million claims fund for women alleging discrimination, it denies all charges.
Here's today's Workers Independent News Service Dow Bob Report. I'm Jesse Russell. With claims of heightened disclosure, the 30 largest companies on the Dow Jones Industrial Average have significantly expanded their annual reports to shareholders over the last 5 years, growing at an average of 13% per year to a median length that now runs past 200 pages per corporate report. Yet that doesn't necessarily mean the reports are more informative. One independent research firm looked at 120 major companies and found only a third actually included understandable information that accurately portrayed the company's bottom line.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send your job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Bush and gang came into office claiming to be morally superior to the sexually crass Bill Clinton. They took special glee in highlighting Clinton's reprehensible attempts to parse the legal language of what constitutes sex, pointing to Bill's infamous contortions over what the definition of is. But, holy hypocrite, look who's doing legalistic contortions now, parsing the language of the law not to excuse personal sexual misconduct, but to rationalize the much more crass act of official torture. Internal memos now show that all of Bush's top lawyers were straining at the bit to unleash the CIA, FBI, and military forces to break both U.S. and international laws that ban the use of torture when interrogating prisoners of war. One in particular, a 2002 memo by Jay Bybee, top legal counsel in Bush's Justice Department, went to extremes to claim that in grilling detainees, the Bushites could use practically any torture methods short of killing prisoners without violating either our own nation's torture law or the Geneva Accords. Bybee's memo went into excruciating detail to parse such terms as severe pain, imminent death, and profound mental disruption. The memo concludes that only physical pain as intense as you would expect from organ failure or death qualifies as torture. Short of that, anything goes. The same anything-goes mentality that corrupted Enron and most of corporate America now is loose at the highest levels of government. It just shows that if top officials unleash crafty lawyers to justify the most despicable actions, they will. By the way, George W. has subsequently put Bybee on the U.S. Court of Appeals, where he can apply his anything-goes mentality to all the cases that come before him. This is Jim Hightower saying, we need a president who will choose lawyers of conscience, not of convenience.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUT.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Greetings to our friends on Cable Radio Network who just joined us on television cable systems from Alaska to Maine.
And special greetings to our friends on listening on RadioPower.org. RadioPower.org is doing their summer fundraiser right now. So be sure to click on to RadioPower.org and pitch in. And welcome back to those of you who are listening on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, all across the country. We're talking about this small bombshell in the old news parlance would be a bad pun or double entendre that Larry Klayman dropped on me this morning, saying that he just learned this yesterday, and you probably haven't seen this in any of the mass media yet, but I'm guessing, given that Larry is very good at getting publicity and he is out there now talking about it, and I think probably I was one of the first people he talked to about it, that this is going to be in the news. And the question that it raises is, what's the appropriate response? Should, God forbid, should something like this actually happen? Here's just a little clip here. Larry Klayman, he's running for the Senate in Florida. He's the founder of Judicial Watch, which is the organization that sued Bill Clinton over Jennifer Flowers way back when, which led ultimately to Clinton's impeachment, and who sued Dick Cheney over the Cheney Energy meetings, the secret meetings with Kenny Boy Lay and other good buddies from Enron and other energy companies, wherein in March, and Klayman was actually able to extract the documents that demonstrated that in March of 2001, months before 9/11, Dick Cheney was planning the invasion of Iraq with a bunch of oil industry executives. Okay? Larry Klayman, an unabashed super conservative, I suppose, who's in some regards openly critical of this administration, for, you know, he shares some of my criticisms of them, but on the other hand, he's on the other side of the political spectrum. We'll figure out what that means. See, that's the meaninglessness of labels like right and left, right? It really is. But anyhow, here was his comment this morning, just about 2 hours ago, in an interview. Larry shared this with me.
Tom, there is a not-so-close secret going around Washington these days that the government has information that multiple nuclear devices are in the United States, that they will likely be used before September 11th, before the Freudian slip, before the elections, and that this is the seriousness of the situation. And, you know, what was interesting the other day, I was watching C-SPAN.
And he goes on to tell a story about how Senator Clinton and Senator Schumer, the two Democrats from New York State, were complaining about how there wasn't enough funding from this administration to the state of New York to protect it from the possibility of nuclear devices being smuggled into New York. And when the reporter gave them an opportunity to take a cheap shot at the Bush administration, essentially saying, is the Bush administration, you know, with Tom Ridge going on TV and saying, be afraid, be very, you know, be wor- you know, time to worry everybody. By the way, I'm not going to give you any details. This is what Ridge said, essentially, you know, telling us that we should all be afraid, but he's not going to tell us who, what, when, where, how, why, any of that. And the reporter gave both Schumer and Senator Clinton a wide open opportunity to take a shot at Bush and say, yes, he's being a fearmonger. Both of them said, no, he's not being a fearmonger. There is a real threat. Nobody has been talking about what the real threat is. Klayman says he knows what it is. Tactical nuclear weapons, suitcase-sized nuclear devices being smuggled into American cities, being, you know, to disrupt the elections. As our caller in the last hour from Washington State pointed out, I think he said he was a nuclear scientist, actually, Bob in Washington State, such a nuclear device that's big enough for somebody to carry it, you know, that weighs under 100 pounds, is what they refer to as a tactical nuclear device or battlefield nuclear device, it's not going to take out Manhattan. Might take out a few city blocks, but it's going to create panic. And, you know, nuclear clouds and radiation and all this kind of stuff. I was in Germany the first week of May of 1986. I landed in Frankfurt as the cloud from Chernobyl was arriving. And it was so spooky walking the streets of Frankfurt to get to my hotel from the train station. And it was raining, and the streets were completely deserted. And I was clueless. I didn't have any idea why the streets were completely deserted in Frankfurt. I thought, this is really weird. Middle of the afternoon, dark, gray, rainy afternoon. I think it was May 8th or May 9th. And because I remember it was just a few days after my birthday. It was right around there. And I get to the hotel, and the guy says, you know, the rain is radioactive. The rain is the cloud from Chernobyl. It's radiation coming down out of the sky. Don't go outside. You know, have room service bring you a meal or eat in the hotel here. It was, but, you know, I mean, people weren't hysterical, but, boy, the fear was palpable. And that was not a terrorist attack. That was an accident, Chernobyl. So anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Your thoughts on this. How should we respond? And what if George Bush, what if, God forbid, something like this were to happen, and George Bush were to say, you know, we just can't have elections. I'm going to use the Emergency Powers Act of 1947 and invoke my right to suspend the elections for the moment. And what if he did that particularly on the day that it looked like the polls were showing that Americans were thinking that he had some blame? That, you know, all the cover-ups around 9/11, and, oh, he didn't want to have the 9/11 commission, and then he gave in, and then he didn't want to give them extra time, and then he gave in. I mean, it's flip-flops, right? And then he gave in, and he didn't want the Senate to investigate it, and then he finally gave in. I mean, he had no choice in these things, essentially, because the American public want to know what happened. After Pearl Harbor, we had an inquisition. We wanted to know what happened, or an inquiry, let's say. And people go back and say, okay, George, you didn't protect us. You tried to cover up, you know, your failure to protect us on 9/11. You're getting a presidential daily briefing on August 6th saying Osama bin Laden's going to hit us in the United States. And what do? You go on vacation for the longest vacation in the history of the American presidency. And when it's over, what do? You don't go back to Washington. No, that's dangerous. Osama bin Laden's going to hit us. You go to Florida, where your brother declares a state of emergency, and you hide out. And people look back on that and go, no, George, we're not going to vote for you this time because we just got hit again. And he says, well, then you can't have an election. How would the American people respond? I can tell you, this is the kind of scenario that Tim McVeigh thought he was bringing about when he bombed the Murrah building, the federal building in Oklahoma City. He thought that he was going to bring about an uprising of the good white gun-toting conservatives against the evil government. He really believed that. He read the Turner Diaries, and he took that science fiction story seriously. What will happen? What will be the outcome of this? Brian in New Jersey's on the line, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I'm kind of under the impression that the government is behind these terror attacks. I know that that's not your opinion, but, I mean, these terror alert systems that we have, is it ever going to go to green? No, that's not the purpose of having the terror alert. It's never going to go to green because then we're safe and they can't, they can't keep us in fear.
You know, Brian, I got to say, number one, I agree with you that there's a huge chunk of the psychology that George Orwell laid out in 1984 at work here. And you go back and you read the novel 1984 by Orwell, and it is so weird to read about what, you know, some of the exact same language these people are. You know, with George Bush, he says, you know, you got to remember when you're talking about war, you're talking about peace.
Exactly. I mean, that's one of the slogans of Big Brother.
That's right. It was one of Big Brother's slogans. Yes, the terror alert system doesn't work, and they're figuring out that it doesn't work. And you know why they don't raise it? They don't raise it because it costs too much money. Every time they raise it, there are these mandated overtime of police and fire departments all over the country. And the couple of times that they did raise it last year, it was breaking the bank of municipalities and states, and they got so much blowback. And so now they're talking about, okay, well, let's go to a local, you know, terror alert thing where we can raise it for New York State or New York City, but not for the whole rest of the country or Washington, which actually makes a little more sense. But still, I mean, you know, what's wrong with just saying, okay, we have an emergency? Anyhow, I interrupted you.
No, that's
point?
Fine. I think what we need to do, if there is, God forbid, another terrorist attack, is we need not to overreact and not lose our rights as much as we did with the first one, because Patriot Act was just, boom, signed right out. And I think that was very rash, and a lot of people were obviously afraid after what happened, but we can't let that happen again. We have to keep as sane as we can. We need to demand that these elections remain. We really need to look into these attacks extremely objectively, because I don't believe we looked into 9/11 as objectively as we could last time. And I think what we need to do before November comes up is, it doesn't really matter who's president. It matters who controls the Congress and who controls the Senate. And so we need to find more Bernie Sanders around this country and support them and get them into office, so that even if the president wants to do something absolutely crazy and insane, the Senate goes, ha-ha, sorry, I don't think so.
Yeah, but we're talking about, number one, I agree and I disagree. I think it does matter who the president is. And, you know, we both understand that the Congress is who appropriates money, and there's great power in the Congress. But the point is that that election doesn't happen until November. And this event that these guys are talking about, and that this, I'm sure this is going to be in the news tonight or tomorrow, it's going to leak out, you know, if into the mainstream news, that this is supposedly going to happen before November. And I think that what we need to do is we need to immunize ourselves of fear. We need to say, okay, you know, so let's imagine that we're living in a state like Israel. You know, I've been to Israel a bunch of times. I've been in Israel when bombs have gone off. I was in Bogota, Colombia, and a bomb went off six blocks from me. And, you know, a car bomb. This was, you know, 12 years ago. And you know, life goes on. You say, okay, you know, we got, you know, the terrorists hit us, you know, life goes on. I mean, you know, it's you just, and I just don't think that we can let this administration.
I have the three slogans here from 1984. It's war is peace, freedom is slavery, and ignorance is strength.
Yeah.
So let's hope that never happens here.
Yes. Well said, Brian. Thank you very much for the call. Good to hear from you. Thanks for listening to us there in New Jersey. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The Senate Intelligence Committee report released last week, just laying it out, right, you know, right there, the Bush administration ignored the reality that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11, that there were no functional connections between Saddam and Osama. In fact, the connections that they had had were hostile connections. That all of the intelligence actually seemed to indicate that there were no weapons of mass destruction. Hans Blix was quickly coming to that conclusion, and George Bush finally says, you know, the UN has failed to keep its responsibility under 1441, we're going to have to intervene. He could have waited another month. What difference would it have made? And we would still have the world on our side. Now, George had to blow it. 20 minutes after the hour, Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today.
Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work, offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. They're just a shot away. Let's hope not. At one point, the CIA reported this, according to the Senate, the United States Senate, the Senate Intelligence Committee, looking into the so-called failure of intelligence. Was it really the CIA's fault that we attacked Iraq, that George W. made the decision? What happened to the buck stops here? Well, you know, oddly, according to the commission report, according to the Senate's report, the Senate committee that was investigating this, according to the Senate, signed off unanimously by the Republicans, the CIA went to the Bush administration and said, Iraq and Al-Qaeda do not have an established formal relationship. And in another instance, they said, quoting here, the Iraqi government actively sought to prevent Iraqi youth from joining Al-Qaeda. Yet at that same time, Dick Cheney continued to tell the American people that Saddam Hussein had, quote, an established relationship with Al-Qaeda. Yes, it was an established relationship. It was a relationship of, we don't want to have anything to do with you. We're not going to let our children participate. Well, I guess, you know, Dick Cheney calls that a relationship. It's like in high school, you can dream about Sally all day long, but that doesn't mean that there's a relationship, right? Well, in Dick Cheney's world, apparently it does. 26 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Chuck in Los Alamos, is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, I think we have not an entire precedent for a political situation that occurs during a fairly significant terrorist attack. I mean, Rudy Giuliani, had discussed that he would delay the handover of the mayor's office in New York to Bloomberg right after 9/11. And the entire city basically said, you know, Rudy, we really appreciate you did a great job, but we've elected Bloomberg, and that's the end of the story. And the handover went forward without a hitch, and not that I'm a Bloomberg fan, but I think that fundamentally the democratic process should never be interrupted under any circumstances.
I agree with you, Chuck, but on 9/11, they were holding either the Republican, Democratic, or both, they were holding the primary election for that mayoral race, and they postponed it.
They did postpone it, but then if you'd lived there, which I did at the time, you'd have found it pretty darn hard to get to the polls, and there was a big issue about disenfranchisement for people being able to vote.
Right. Yeah, and then, see, that's really the bottom line. So now the question is, do you postpone...
The question is suspend or postpone for a specific period of time.
Right. And for a specific reason that has to do with physical logistics as opposed to paranoia, fear, and psychological, you know,
hysteria. Absolutely, and that to me is the huge difference. That's that word that they use, suspend. I don't like that. Postpone, you know, for 1 week, okay. Suspend, that's a different story.
Yeah, I think even postpone for 1 week. It's like, give us an opportunity to come up with the spin and get Fox News on the job here and, you know, change Americans' perceptions of reality. I mean, keep in mind, you know, 9/11 happened, and within a month or so, because, I mean, on 9/12, the day after 9/11, you had three different administration officials out there talking about Saddam Hussein. And, you know, the day after 9/11, and within a month and a half, 2 months, you had 60-70% of Americans thinking that there were Iraqis on those planes when there were not. They were Saudis and Yemenis.
No, I absolutely agree with you, Tom. I guess my whole point is that I could see look, I live 300 yards from the World Trade Center. I since moved. I couldn't have made it to the polls. There's no way.
Yeah. So there was a practical physical problem there. And that makes sense. But we're talking about the entire nation. The entire nation, you know.
I agree with you completely. Absolutely.
Okay. And thanks, Chuck. I appreciate it. And if a city gets paralyzed, then you say, okay, that city can vote next week, you know. But we're going to carry on with the rest of the election. Sorry, guys. It's 29 minutes past the hour. Should we postpone democracy? I don't think so. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. You're listening to the True People's Radio. More than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
With their contracts coming to an end in Iraq, many Indians are heading home to file complaints against the contractors that hired them. Those complaints include not providing adequate drinking water, food, health care, or security. Tens of thousands of foreign contractors are currently participating in the reconstruction for wages that are one-tenth of what U.S. workers would earn. One of the complaints says that many workers were led to believe they would be working in Kuwait City, but then found themselves on a bus to the northern Iraqi city of Mosul. Another says that Hindus were served beef and Muslims were ordered to handle pork. And one night when explosions went off outside the dining facility, while their Western counterparts were provided with protective gear, the Indians had to stand in the open air in their pajamas. India has asked for assistance from the U.S. Defense Department in researching the complaints filed against Kellogg Brown & Root, a subsidiary of Halliburton, but the Army has responded that responsibility rests with the company.
For only the third time in Mexico's history, the voters sent a woman to the governor's mansion last week, and she attributes her victory to migration. In Mexico, where millions of citizens travel back and forth across the border seeking jobs, women have gained more independence and political clout as men have left seeking work. In the state Emilia Garcia won, Zacatecas, half of the population live in the United States.
A strike that would have shut down the nation's largest port complex has been averted thanks to an agreement reached this weekend. Clerical workers at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach threatened to walk off the job, and 4,000 longshoremen who worked the docks had promised to not cross their picket lines. The workers were concerned that new technology upgrades would put their jobs in jeopardy. The agreement gives the workers a no-layoff clause, a pay raise, and improved retirement benefits.
The brokerage Wall Street firm of Morgan Stanley agreed to pay $54 million on Monday to avoid a sex discrimination trial brought by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The EEOC claims Morgan Stanley engaged in a pattern of discrimination against its female employees, paying them less and passing them over for promotions. Women were expected to testify that they were not given raises for taking maternity leave and battered with sexist comments. Even though the company is setting up a $40 million claims fund for women alleging discrimination, it denies all charges.
Here's today's Workers' Independent News Service Dow Bob Report. I'm Jesse Russell. With claims of heightened disclosure, the 30 largest companies on the Dow Jones Industrial Average have significantly expanded their annual reports to shareholders over the last 5 years, growing at an average of 13% per year to a median length that now runs past 200 pages per corporate report. Yet that doesn't necessarily mean the reports are more informative. One independent research firm looked at 120 major companies and found only a third actually included understandable information that accurately portrayed the company's bottom line.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. And we need the truth, yeah. Yeah. And have we been getting it from this administration? Apparently not. Apparently we didn't get it before we attacked Iraq either. According to the Senate Intelligence Committee, George Tenet directly contacted National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice and her deputy, Stephen Hadley, directly contacted them in October of 2002. Now, keep in mind, see what people, the timeline that people forget to juxtapose is that there was an election in November of 2002, and the Republicans were playing this thing for all they could, trying to put Democrats on the spot with the vote in October of 2002. Are you with the United States or are you against us? Are you in favor of giving the president the power to disarm a dangerous dictator? Or are you unwilling to give the president the option of using American force to deal with what may be a real threat? And we find now that even the United States Senate was misled by this administration. In October of 2002... George Tenet personally contacted, according to the Senate Intelligence Committee report, personally contacted Condi Rice and Stephen Hadley to tell them that the president should not say that Iraq had bought uranium from Africa because, quote, the evidence was weak, end quote. In fact, the CIA even sent a fax to the White House. Hey, George, hey, W, special alert, pay attention. Quote, this is from the CIA fax to the White House in October of 2002. Quote, this is one of the two issues where we differ with the British. Nonetheless, just 2 months later, the president publicly declares, Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa. After he had been told that it wasn't the truth. Now, the second half of the report, of course, the second half of the report that deals with the White House spinning and lying is not going to come out from the United States Senate until after the November election, assuming it's held. Where is the outrage? Why aren't American? Well, maybe they are. Maybe they are. Maybe it's out there and it's going to show up in the polls in November. We'll see. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Damien in Springfield, Massachusetts is on the line. Hey, Damien, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me online.
Sure.
I wanted to talk to you regarding the possibility of the suspending the election.
Yeah.
And whether that may be advisable or not. I think the only time I would think that you may have to suspend an election is if there is possible attack directly on a polling place.
On a polling place. Well,
right, or somewhere where, because, well, I'd be, just thinking about this issue over the past couple of days.
Yeah.
Since it's been on the report in the media, is if there is something where that can ruin the integrity of the election, say there's something happening in Florida or a battleground state.
Yeah.
Or
well,
see, something happening in those areas.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement. I mean, my point has been that if you've got a city or even, God forbid, a state, although most states are so large, it's pretty inconceivable. But if you've got an area where, we've been attacked and it's sufficiently chaotic that it's just not reasonable to assume that people are going to vote there, like New York City on 9/11.
Right.
Then, it's entirely appropriate to say, okay, that community is going to vote a week from today, but the rest of the United States is going to go ahead and vote. I mean, it's just like the people in Hawaii on Election Day in November, right? The polls in Hawaii close after the networks have told us who's already president.
Right.
And, city.
No, I do agree. I think the primary job of a president or a presidential candidate is to protect the integrity of an election. I think that's what Nixon did in 1960, and I think that's what Gore eventually did in 2000. But I do see where there may be a reason, if there is a possibility of attacks at polling places, which, even if there are a couple of small ones, I know some of your callers have been saying, well, a small bomb doesn't cause many casualties. But even a couple of small conventional problems, if they're in the right areas, could really wreak havoc to an election.
Sure.
No, I would say that we have to do an election all at once. Now I understand how Hawaii and the West Coast, they have those last couple hours where the rest of the country's closed. But I would favor more just for having a single day vote, suspending the nation for 2 days, three days, whatever it may be.
I'm not willing to do that, Damien, because that is going to give the vote is supposed to happen on the day that it's supposed to happen. You say, okay, this is the day. This is what happened. This is, and you don't change the rules. In fact, Bernie Sanders has some thoughts on this that I'd like to share with you in just a second. But I strongly disagree. I think that we have to say, okay, if there are communities that can't vote for logistical reasons, then let them vote a week later or a few days later or as soon as possible, and that's up to the local community people. But nationally, we are not going to suspend an election. We didn't suspend elections during the Civil War. We didn't suspend elections during World War One. We didn't suspend them during World War Two. We're not going to suspend them because some terrorists have struck a couple
of cities.
Well,
I think the main thing I worry about, I think we're basically almost on the same ground. Now, I think it's last time I taught college, I acknowledge I am a conservative. I'm very afraid of if there is an attack. Now, particularly if there's an attack right on Election Day. No, the integrity of elections. Now, I can, particularly in how contested our elections have become.
But see, that's just another news event.
In Florida, it could be a toss up as to who won.
But Damien, it's just another news event. I mean, it's not obviously in those communities where they physically can't get to the polls. But for the rest of the nation, it's just. I mean, what do you want to give everybody a week to think about it and Fox News time to spin it for everybody?
I think it's basically to try to preserve the election. I don't think we should have a question as to.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think your point about Nixon not contesting the 1960 election, even though he had evidence in Chicago of vote fraud and that might have given the election to Kennedy, and Al Gore deciding that for the good of the nation, he wasn't going to continue to contest George Bush's theft of the election. Of course, he didn't know about the disenfranchisement of 80,000 voters in Florida. I think that those are good points, but I'm not willing to say that we should simply say to the whole nation, hey, New York City's out, San Francisco's out, Denver's out, therefore the rest of the country has to wait. It doesn't work for me. Damien, thanks for the call, though. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's 19 minutes before the hour. This gets right now down to the same issue of and by the way, in our chat room, Marion made the point, hey, you know, I'm quoting Larry Klayman here. Larry Klayman, I want to make it very clear, is on the other end of the political spectrum from me. And I don't agree with his politics by and large. There are some things that we agree on, like Dick Cheney is you know, lying to America and has sold us down the river. My words, not his, but, you know, his lawsuit against Cheney. But I'm not quoting him as, you know, the voice of God, or as some, you know, super credible, gee, isn't this great, you know, this guy. What I'm saying is, if the guy who did the lawsuit that brought down ultimately Bill Clinton to the extent that he got brought down, and that may bring down Dick Cheney, is running around right now saying this out loud to any reporter who will talk to him, you know, and I'm assuming that that's the case because I called him up and said, hey, you know, what's going on? And he lays this thing on me. Then it's either going to get out in the media, or if it doesn't, in my mind, that is going to be very interesting as well. You know, what if you don't? You know, okay, you heard this story. And I can tell you, I have contacted some people that I know in Washington, D.C., who have said they can't deny this. You know, who I know, if they knew that it wasn't true, would have said, nah, no way. They're not saying that. So, but this is still, it's a rumor. Hey, this is from the CIA, let me tell you. You know, no. It's Larry Klayman. He may or may not be credible. But the larger issue that it raises is, how do we respond? What do we do? And my take on that is, you play the game by the rules of the game. This is what happened in the House of Representatives last week, last Friday, where the House has these very specific rules. They say, okay, you got 15 minutes to take a vote. It's been this way for centuries. For the first time in history, they kept it up. They kept the vote open longer than 15 minutes for the Medicare bill, and this was in the middle of the night, and they kept the vote open for 3 hours, from like, you know, 2 a.m. until 5 a.m. So that Denny Hastert could run around and offer bribes to Nick Smith and threats to everybody else, or so it is alleged by Nick Smith, congressman from Michigan. And so, you know, the rules are, after 15 minutes, you take a vote. And in 15 minutes, they took a vote on an amendment that Bernie Sanders had added to a defense appropriation bill that would have reversed part of the Patriot Act that allows the government to take records of people from librarians without probable cause. Now, the FBI could still go to libraries, even after Bernie's piece was passed, could still go to a library with a warrant. If they had any kind of probable cause, if they had any kind of evidence that somebody was engaged in terrorist activity or planning to, they could go to before a judge and say, here's the proof, judge, and he'd say, okay, here's a warrant. You go to the library and get the records. It's always been that way. And it would go back to being that way. But right now, they can go to the library or to the bookstore or whatever. Now we know that our Internet service providers, when you send an email and you click send, it gets stored on their hard drive. And that's not considered confidential, so presumably they fall into this as well. Now the FBI can go to them and say, we have no evidence that this guy's doing anything wrong. We don't have a warrant. We haven't talked to a judge. But you have to give us all of the records of the books that this person has read or bought. And not only do you have to give us the records, but if you tell this person that we were here asking about them, you, the librarian, goes to prison. So Bernie Sanders proposes a small amendment to this defense appropriation bill that would change that, and he actually got 219 votes at 15 minutes after when the vote was taken. In other words, he won. And Denny Hastert says, wait a minute, we can't have that. We didn't win. We're going to keep the vote open. And he's running around to the, you know, talking to the Republicans who had voted with the Democrats on this, and keeps the vote open for another half hour, 23 minutes, until he's got it down to 210 versus 210. And this is Bernie Sanders' response to that. And I thought it was just absolutely spot on.
I'm from Vermont. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And let me begin by thanking the 191 Democrats and 18 Republicans who voted for that important amendment. But I'm not going to discuss the substance of that amendment because that debate took place. And I respect the people on both sides of that debate. But what I do not respect is that when we are having a debate about basic American democratic rights and what our Constitution is supposed to be, I resent bitterly on behalf of the American people that the Republican leadership rigged the game. That's wrong. At the end of nine innings of a baseball game,
He's being applauded by his colleagues.
At the end of nine innings of a baseball game, the team that has the most runs wins. At the end of the 17 minutes tonight, our side won, and it wasn't even close. Now, what kind of lesson are we showing the children of America when we tell them get involved in the political process, that we are a free country, that we're fighting abroad for democracy, when we rig a vote on this floor? Shame, shame, shame.
And as the Republicans rigged the vote in the House of Representatives, now there's talk within the administration about rigging the vote in November on a national basis if there is an attack. If there is an attack by Al-Qaeda or anybody else, who knows who it may come from? 1-866-889-8894. Rob from opednews.com, you're actually calling from Pennsylvania, but Rob runs the news site, www.opednews.com. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I've been losing sleep over this business about canceling the elections. I heard the gentleman who is proposing this on CNN last night.
Yeah.
And he didn't talk about postponing it, actually. That's not the way he put it. He put it that what we're talking about him doing is...
suspending.
Is what?
Suspending.
Suspending,
was it?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. There's a huge difference there.
Yeah, there
and,
is.
And what really worries me is that just the way they bent the rules, or they just ignored them and just delayed the election that you just talked about. You had the tape from
this
Bernie.
Is in the House of Representatives on Friday. The Republicans said, "Hey, you know, we don't care about the election rules. We didn't get our way, so we're gonna change the rules in the middle of the game."
Well, that's what worries me. If they put anything in the rules about suspending elections,
well, it's already there. It's already there. The president under the 1947, I think it's the War Powers Act. I'd have to go and check, but it was a 1947 law, gives the president the power to suspend elections in case of a national emergency. Now, my understanding is it also requires a two-thirds vote of the House and Senate and a majority vote of the Supreme Court. And I understand from one source, which I'm trying to confirm, that the Patriot Act did away with those confirmation requirements and gave the president the ability to do it unilaterally. I'm gonna find out about that. I got a couple of calls into legislators to try and track this down.
Well, that's scary because the way they bend and twist the rules, they can turn it. All they have to do is pretend that there's something threatened and it could be opened up.
There you go.
One last thing.
Well,
I'm glad.
Hang on, Rob. It's the Tom Hartman Program. 10 minutes before the hour.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month of $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. Union organizing could become a lot harder in the near future. The National Labor Relations Board moved to review the legality of card check agreements, threatening the ability of unions to avoid the lengthy election certification process.
Card check is a way of getting around what has become a dysfunctional system that focuses on the NLRB election.
Nelson Lichtenstein is a professor of history at UC Santa Barbara and author of State of the Union, A Century of American Labor. Under a card check agreement, an employer automatically accepts a union if a majority of workers indicate their intent to form one. Under current U.S. labor law, when a union files for an election, the company has the right to hold captive audience meetings.
They demand that all employees must show up for a meeting in which union representatives are excluded, but in which management has the right to really badger the workers, show horrifying films, and really threaten to shut down the plant.
Even if the union wins an election, the company often fires union activists, hires anti-union consultants, and delays the results of the election for years.
At Columbia University, for example, where the teaching assistants have just finished a strike, the election was held 2 years ago. And so what that means in many workplaces is that the workforce has turned over and you really have to begin all over again.
It's a popular form of organizing. Of the 500,000 people who have joined unions in the last few years, the majority joined as part of card check agreements. The NLRB is also reviewing whether or not to allow workers to push for a union decertification vote immediately rather than after the current one-year waiting period. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
In the year 2000, the Democrats won the election. But Bush and the Republicans couldn't take the rejection.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 4.5 minutes before the hour. A couple of interesting little factoids. Jerry Ayer, 1950, in the chat room, which you can get to by going to www.tomhartman.com and just click on the live chat button up at the top of the screen. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. And click the chat button there, and boom, you're in the chat room here with us. Anyhow, Jerry Ayer says, Tom, sorry, but Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution says, the Congress may determine the time of choosing the electors and the day on which they shall give their votes, which day shall be the same throughout the United States. Yeah, well, you know, the Constitution also says that you can't be held in jail unless you have access to an attorney and you've been charged with a crime. But that hasn't stopped this administration from putting U.S. citizens in jail with no access to attorneys, without being charged with crimes. I mean, to this day, even when the Supreme Court ruled against them, they're still holding these people. And on it goes here. The Senate report, the United States Senate Intelligence Committee report, shows unambiguously. I mean, it's amazing to me how few people in the media apparently have bothered to actually spend any time with this thing. It lays it out that the CIA was telling the White House, hey, there's no link between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. None. And the stuff about Africa and uranium, that, you know, the British have got that wrong. It's a forgery. Don't go there. It's too weak. Quote, end quote. Too weak. And what does Cheney and Bush do? They go public with it anyway. You got Pat Roberts, who is the Republican chairman of the committee, saying the administration was ahead of the intelligence, was leading the intelligence. What does that mean? It means George Bush and Dick Cheney go on the air and say something, and now the intelligence analysts are frantic because they've got to find proof to back it up. This is not how you run a nation. We're not being led, we're being misled. And it is harming our standing around the world. It is harming our status here at home. It is harming the future of democracy. I am absolutely and utterly convinced that the George W. Bush administration will go down in history as one of the worst in the history of the United States. And let us hope that this the tragedy of this administration is ended in November when the elections happen and John Kerry is elected President of the United States. It's all I can say. It's time for a change. Tom Hartman here with you. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
With their contracts coming to an end in Iraq, many Indians are heading home to file complaints against the contractors that hired them. Those complaints include not providing adequate drinking water, food, health care, or security. Tens of thousands of foreign contractors are currently participating in the reconstruction for wages that are one-tenth of what U.S. workers would earn. One of the complaints says that many workers were led to believe they would be working in Kuwait City, but then found themselves on a bus to the northern Iraqi city of Mosul. Another says that Hindus were served beef and Muslims were ordered to handle pork. And one night when explosions went off outside the dining facility, while their Western counterparts were provided with protective gear, the Indians had to stand in the open air in their pajamas. India has asked for assistance from the U.S. Defense Department in researching the complaints filed against Kellogg Brown & Root, a subsidiary of Halliburton, but the Army has responded that that responsibility rests with the company.
For only the third time in Mexico's history, the voters sent a woman to the governor's mansion last week, and she attributes her victory to migration. In Mexico, where millions of citizens travel back and forth across the border seeking jobs, women have gained more independence and political clout as men have left seeking work. In the state Emilia Garcia won, Zacatecas, half of the population live in the United States.
A strike that would have shut down the nation's largest port complex has been averted thanks to an agreement reached this weekend. Clerical workers at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach threatened to walk off the job, and 4,000 longshoremen who worked the docks had promised to not cross their picket lines. The workers were concerned that new technology upgrades would put their jobs in jeopardy. The agreement gives the workers a no-layoff clause, a pay raise, and improved retirement benefits.
The brokerage Wall Street firm of Morgan Stanley agreed to pay $54 million on Monday to avoid a sex discrimination trial brought by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The EEOC claims Morgan Stanley engaged in a pattern of discrimination against its female employees, paying them less and passing them over for promotions. Women were expected to testify that they were not given raises for taking maternity leave and battered with sexist comments. Even though the company is setting up a $40 million claims fund for women alleging discrimination, it denies all charges.
Here's today's Workers Independent News Service Dow Bob Report. I'm Jesse Russell. With claims of heightened disclosure, the 30 largest companies on the Dow Jones Industrial Average have significantly expanded their annual reports to shareholders over the last 5 years, growing at an average of 13% per year to a median length that now runs past 200 pages per corporate report. Yet that doesn't necessarily mean the reports are more informative. One independent research firm looked at 120 major companies and found only a third actually included understandable information that accurately portrayed the company's bottom line.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. And after a year, you finally land another job. And you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
The Timken Company, based in Canton, Ohio, makes steel and other industrial products, and last year, it was the proud recipient of a visit by His Eminence, George W. Bush. The Prez had traveled to Ohio, a state that's up for grabs in this fall's election, to hype the value of all the tax giveaways he's passed for the rich. He went to Canton to claim that those giveaways would trickle down from the rich to create jobs for middle-class America, and he needed a good visual for his televised speech. Timken's factory was the perfect made-for-TV backdrop. A crowd of Timken's hard-hatted blue-collar workers was dutifully assembled for Bush. The boss man, Tim Timken himself, was on stage beaming with pride and nodding in approval at George's every sentence. Why wouldn't he? Tim has long been a major financial backer of both Bush presidents. Now, fast forward to May of this year. Just months after George's highly publicized rooster strut in Canton, Tim announced that he was closing three of his U.S. factories, eliminating 1,300 jobs, and moving production to low-wage centers elsewhere, including overseas. Curiously, there was no national media coverage of this development, which made a mockery of Bush's earlier political posturing. What's to happen to the workers who were made to serve as props for George's pitch about the power of trickle-down economics? I have no idea what I'm going to do, says Scott Anderson, 41 years old and a 23-year loyal worker at Timken. There are just no good job opportunities left in this community. Scott added that he now couldn't pay for the college education of his kids. I want a better America, as my parents did for me, he says. Ironically, a Timken spokesman coldly replied, "It's a business issue, not a political issue." This is Jim Hightower saying he's dead wrong about that. By stiffing America's middle class, Bush and Tim Temkin are playing with political dynamite.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill 6 eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friend. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org as well. So much in the news today. John Kerry, this is fascinating. The Republican Party, or at least the George W. Bush campaign bunch, nobody's sure exactly who it is behind it. But it has hired Marie Spath apparently put this thing together. She was a communications advisor in the Reagan White House. And she's hired a private detective and created this group called Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. And, put in charge of it John O'Neill, who is a guy who Richard Nixon in 1970 had hired as he was then a college student, or he was, not a college student. He had been on the same Swift boat that John Kerry was after Kerry. He was the commander after Kerry left Vietnam. The two guys had not met in Vietnam, but they had the same job. And he was the spokesman for the Nixon side of the Vietnam War. In 1970. And this guy now is put together this thing, and they got this private eye. And it is absolutely fascinating how the people who were on the boat with Kerry are now reporting that this private detective, his name is Tom Ruprath, of Rockwall, Texas, has been, to quote the Dallas Morning News, twisting their words to produce misleading and inaccurate accounts that call into doubt the medals Kerry received for his service. Jim Wasser, one of the people who served with Kerry, says, they're just distorting things. They have nothing to go after John Kerry for, so now they're trying to discredit him. The politics of personal assassination, coming to a newspaper near, coming to Fox News near you soon. One of the people who worked with Kerry, a guy by the name of Pat Runyon, he was a member of the crew of Kerry's boat. Now, keep in mind, this is when George Bush was down in Alabama drinking, unable to show up for his military service, his National Guard duty for a year, vanished. We discovered last week that the Pentagon records have been mysteriously destroyed, and the Texas records, yes, there are duplicate records in Texas, the Texas records can only be released if George Bush authorizes their release, and he won't do it. George W. Bush will not authorize the release of his own medical service records held by the state of Texas from when he served in the Texas Air National Guard. So anyhow, during the same time, Pat Runyon is on a Swift boat with John Kerry. John Kerry was the commander of the boat. Pat Runyon, this from this article in this morning's Dallas Morning News by Wayne Slater. Pat Runyon said the crew was patrolling north of Cameron Bay the night of December 2, 1968, when Kerry and his fellow crewman, Bill Zeladonis, spotted Viet Cong guerrillas massed on a beach and began firing. He said Kerry was subsequently treated for a wound to the arm, which led to his first Purple Heart. Runyon said he recounted the episode for the private investigator, this being the private eye that the Bush campaign has hired to try and find some dirt on Kerry, right? Runyon tells this story to this guy, Tom Ruprath, this private detective. Runyon says he recounted the episode for the private investigator because he gave the impression he was working for an independent or pro-Kerry veterans group. Is it the only way that the Bush administration can conduct themselves is to lie to people? I mean, it seems that there is that pattern here. But Runyon said he was distressed when the investigators sent him an inaccurate synopsis of their conversation, suggesting that the wound was likely caused by a flare. He says, this is what Pat Runyon says, Pat, who was on the boat with John Kerry that night. He says, I have no problem with the truth as long as they put it out the way it happened, but I told him I didn't want him to use it, didn't like it, and felt he'd missed the whole feeling of the mission. Twisting his words. Opponents of John Kerry, this is the Dallas Morning News, opponents of John Kerry have hired a private investigator to gather information aimed at discrediting Kerry's military service, say several veterans who served with the Massachusetts Democrat in Vietnam. Several veterans who have been contacted in recent days accused the private investigator, Tom Ruprath of Rockwall, Texas, of twisting their words to produce misleading and inaccurate accounts that would call into doubt the medals Kerry received for his service. Jim Wasser, who served with Kerry, said, they're just distorting things. They have nothing to go after John Kerry for, so now they're trying to discredit him. Ruprath was hired by Swift Boat Veterans for Truth on the recommendation of Mary Spareth, a Dallas PR executive. She was the communications advisor in the Reagan White House. Glenn Smith, who is the author of the book The Politics of Deceit, says this is unusual in that it appears to be push research and not real research. Push research is sort of like push polling. Push polling is what the Bush campaign did against John McCain in South Carolina in 2000 when John McCain was in the lead. And in order to become the presidential nominee, and it looked like John McCain was going to be the Republican nominee for president, and Karl Rove said, we can't have that. And so they manned these phone banks, and they called tens of thousands of registered Republicans in South Carolina the week before the primary, the Republican primary, and said, would it change your vote if you discovered that John McCain, who had been a prisoner of war for 5 years in Vietnam, had been treated for psychiatric illness as a result of that experience? Or, there were three different questions they asked different people. Or, would it change your vote if you learned that John McCain's wife had been having an affair? Or would it and might be mentally unstable? Would it change your vote if you discovered that John McCain had a child out of wedlock with a black woman? Now, none of these things were true, and the Bush campaign to this day says, "Hey, we never said that it was true. We simply asked people if it would change their mind if they heard that." And sure enough, it did change a lot of people's minds because McCain, who had been ahead in the polls in South Carolina, having just won the New Hampshire primary, went down to defeat as a result of this push polling. So now we've got this same campaign. And this, you know, the same Republican National Committee. Now, granted, the RNC in 2000 was not headed up by former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie. Actually, at that point in time, Ed Gillespie was still making $700,000 a year as a lobbyist for Enron. Enron fired him in 2001, and now he's head of the Republican National Committee. It's called landing on your feet when you've got friends in high places. So we can't, you know, quite blame him, but it appears that this is coming from the Bush. Nobody's sure exactly where this is coming from. Probably from the Bush campaign. Now, Glenn Smith, who wrote the book The Politics of Deceit, says push research means you have a conclusion and you're going to talk to people and push your words, push their words to reach your conclusion. Remarkable. Remarkable. And now the Bush records, you know, apparently were destroyed in an attempt to reclaim them. The microfilm simply disintegrated. Microfilm. Now, all the other microfilm has a 50-year shelf life. We have no problem with any of the microfilm that had anything other than George Bush's service records. But that microfilm seems to have been permanently and irretrievably damaged in an effort to restore it. So I'm serious. This is really what they want you to believe. So anyway, it's an interesting news day. We've got this. This is sort of, I guess, soft news. The hard news of the day, as it were, you know, Larry Klayman's comment to me earlier today that it's an open secret in Washington, D.C. that, well, I'll just share his words with you. It's just very briefly. And again, I'm not vouching for Larry Klayman's credibility. I'm sure he's been wrong on a lot of things. He defended Bob Barr in the lawsuit with Larry Flynt. You know, he was clearly wrong on that. On the other hand, he was the one who started the Jennifer Flowers lawsuit against Bill Clinton, which, you know, the outcome of that. And he was the one who started the lawsuit when he headed up Judicial Watch against Dick Cheney with the energy policy. But the guy is, you know, strong conservative, running for the Senate in Florida. ClaymanSenate.com is his website. And here's his comment this morning.
Tom, there is a not-so-close secret going around Washington these days that the government has information that multiple nuclear devices are in the United States, that they will likely be used before September 11th, excuse me, before the Freudian slip, before the elections, and that this is the seriousness of the situation. And, you know,
And then he goes on to talk about that. So, you know, which would be a very serious situation, right? This is. So, you know, it really sort of, you know, was George Bush, you know, too drunk for service for that year or not, kind of pales in comparison, or was, you know, when John Kerry was in Vietnam, serving his second tour of duty, by the way, having volunteered and then volunteered to go back into the most dangerous service available. I mean, riding these little boats up and down the rivers of the Mekong Delta. Was one of his purple hearts the result of a flare going off instead of a... But, you know, I don't care. But it's, you know, this is the push research now that's been going on. And, you know, this stuff sort of pales in comparison. The fact that in Austin, Texas, there actually is an archive. By Texas law, it has to be there. Of George Bush's records, service records, that apparently would demonstrate that he was not just AWOL, because AWOL is only up to 30 days. On the 31st day, you become a deserter. And he was gone for a lot more than 30 days. But he won't sign the paper releasing the authorizing the release of that. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
Are Georgia policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. It's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's just time.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with you. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Just sitting and listening to your show, my mother and I, and she's a very intelligent woman, but certainly not a political wonk like you and I are. She asked the question we kind of seem to be tiptoeing around. How credible is it to worry that talking about the postponement or of the vote, how credible is it to think that an attack might be engineered toward that end to just to facilitate the abeyance of the vote?
Well, you know, there are still people who think that Roosevelt organized Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and who knows? I mean,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure he didn't, but there are still people out there who are quite convinced that he did, and there certainly were many in that time, because the Republicans in particular were so strongly opposed to entering the war in Europe and going up against Hitler. I mean, Hitler, you know, strong conservative guy, you know, it's he's... You know, well, he was proclaiming, you know, the new Christianity in Germany, and he had brought about a merger of corporate and state interests. He was, you know.
But how tragic that just an average American woman would be brought to the point of even bringing the question up.
Yeah. Well, I think that there are a lot of people who you know, with considerable integrity and you know, really have some real legitimate concern or fear or whatever the right word is, that even 9/11 was engineered. I mean, you know, Dave in Humboldt County, who calls the show fairly regularly, seems to be convinced of it from the research that he's done, and others, you know, many others, and there's books out about this. You know, I think I agree with you, Chris. The tragedy is not, you know, might this be the case? The tragedy is that Americans are asking themselves that question, because that implies a knowledge of the level of corruption that this administration has already conducted. You know, that they've lied to us, and we know now that they have lied to us. Not just that they got fooled by the CIA. No, they actually lied to us, and they're continuing to lie to us.
Yep.
And this is really sad. It's really sad.
Thanks,
say hi to your mother for me, Chris.
Thanks,
thanks for the call. Give her our very best regards. Everybody's mother deserves a lot of respect. And if mine is listening, hi, Mom. Anyhow, doing something right. You know, there's this old management saw that it's always better to catch people doing things right than to catch people doing things wrong. That most people who mismanage do it by zapping people when they do something wrong, and I think it's much better, you know, to congratulate people when they do things right. You get more of the same behavior from them, which is what you want. So our caught you doing something right for the day, because we'd like more of this. You know, okay, this is political. Yeah, is Senator John Kerry? And I'm amazed this didn't get more publicity. On Friday, called for raising the federal minimum wage to $7 an hour, which is what it is here in Vermont, by the way, I think. And saying the move would help millions of Americans, particularly women, break out of poverty. On Friday, he announced that it would be one of his first acts as president to raise the minimum wage from $5.15, where it is right now, to $7 an hour. Now, he wants to do it by 2007. I say, what's wrong with doing it by March? How about April? But, you know, then I'm probably more liberal than John Kerry. See, now, whatever that means, right? I mean, the cons say, oh, he's against puppies. He must be a liberal. I mean, you know, it's amazing the things that they put. Anyhow, California, it's a $6.75 an hour. Vermont, it's a $7 an hour. Why not? You know, the minimum wage right now is at the lowest level it's been since 1949. You cannot earn a living on the minimum wage. And so Kerry says, don't you think that if a president can go out and fight for 4 years over $1 trillion in tax cuts to the wealthiest people in America, he can fight for a few months to raise the minimum wage for the poorest people in America? Well, you know, it makes perfect sense to John Kerry. It seems counterintuitive, however, to born with a silver spoon in his mouth, George W. Bush. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The True People's Radio.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
With their contracts coming to an end in Iraq, many Indians are heading home to file complaints against the contractors that hired them. Those complaints include not providing adequate drinking water, food, health care, or security. Tens of thousands of foreign contractors are currently participating in the reconstruction for wages that are one-tenth of what U.S. workers would earn. One of the complaints says that many workers were led to believe they would be working in Kuwait City, but then found themselves on a bus to the northern Iraqi city of Mosul. Another says that Hindus were served beef and Muslims were ordered to handle pork. And one night when explosions went off outside the dining facility, while their Western counterparts were provided with protective gear, the Indians had to stand in the open air in their pajamas. India has asked for assistance from the U.S. Defense Department in researching the complaints filed against Kellogg Brown & Root, a subsidiary of Halliburton, but the Army has responded that that responsibility rests with the company.
For only the third time in Mexico's history, the voters sent a woman to the governor's mansion last week, and she attributes her victory to migration. In Mexico, where millions of citizens travel back and forth across the border seeking jobs, women have gained more independence and political clout as men have left seeking work. In the state Emilia Garcia won, Zacatecas, half of the population live in the United States.
A strike that would have shut down the nation's largest port complex has been averted thanks to an agreement reached this weekend. Clerical workers at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach threatened to walk off the job, and 4,000 longshoremen who worked the docks had promised to not cross their picket lines. The workers were concerned that new technology upgrades would put their jobs in jeopardy. The agreement gives the workers a no-layoff clause, a pay raise, and improved retirement benefits.
The brokerage Wall Street firm of Morgan Stanley agreed to pay $54 million on Monday to avoid a sex discrimination trial brought by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The EEOC claims Morgan Stanley engaged in a pattern of discrimination against its female employees, paying them less and passing them over for promotions. Women were expected to testify that they were not given raises for taking maternity leave and battered with sexist comments. Even though the company is setting up a $40 million claims fund for women alleging discrimination, it denies all charges.
Here's today's Workers' Independent News Service Dow Bob Report. I'm Jesse Russell. With claims of heightened disclosure, the 30 largest companies on the Dow Jones Industrial Average have significantly expanded their annual reports to shareholders over the last 5 years, growing at an average of 13% per year to a median length that now runs past 200 pages per corporate report. Yet that doesn't necessarily mean the reports are more informative. One independent research firm looked at 120 major companies and found only a third actually included understandable information that accurately portrayed the company's bottom line.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Amen. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 26 and a half minutes before the hour. We have a conservative alert coming up. An interesting report that the Center for American Progress has put together on faux news, the confounding of America, I would call it. Our number, if you'd like to call in, 1-866-889-8894. Share your thoughts, observations, concerns, issues, questions, arguments, debates, whatever it may be. 1-866-889-8894. Brad in Brooklyn, New York is on the line. Hey, Brad.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Oh, it's Brad who does our music. Hey, Brad, I'm great. And thanks for the great bumper music today.
You're welcome. I have missed the last couple shows. I was on the road. I'm catching up at White Rose. But I wondered if you had talked about the new movie called The Corporation.
No, I haven't talked about it yet because it's not starting at our local theater here for another week and a half or 2 weeks. And so I haven't seen it yet.
I read a review last week's Entertainment Weekly, which made it sound very good.
Yeah, it sounds like it was written. It's basically the movie version of my book on equal protection.
Yeah, could be. I went and saw the... the trailer at the Apple's website, the QuickTime movie trailer site.
Yeah.
And their website is www.thecorporation.tv.
Okay.
And it sounds good.
Yeah, yeah. Brad, have you seen Control Room?
No, I heard you talking about that earlier.
Yeah, you've got to go see this movie. This Control Room. It's a documentary about Al Jazeera, and I thought I understood Al Jazeera and understood what was going on in the Middle East. I mean, you know, I've been there a lot. I've never been to Al Jazeera. You know, I've never been to Qatar, but I've been a lot in many different parts of the Middle East. But boy, did that thing really. I couldn't say exactly what I learned. It was more like an ambiance, a feeling, a sense of, oh yeah, now I don't know how to describe it. It's just you got to go see the movie. It's brilliant.
I'll check it out. I'm catching up. I saw Fahrenheit 9/11 last Monday.
Yeah.
So I'm catching up.
Okay. Brad, you live in New York City.
Yeah.
If there was a, God forbid, if there was a terrorist attack in New York City, and do you think that the Bush administration would be justified in suspending the elections?
No, but I'm sure they would think it would be justified.
Yeah.
I'm certainly interested in the specifics of how wide-ranging these tactical nuclear suitcase bombs are, or you know, because I'm pretty far out in Brooklyn. But nonetheless, I mean, wouldn't any nuclear bomb be picked up by the wind and affect a lot more miles than the number of blocks you guys were talking about earlier?
Well, see, that's what causes the hysteria is the fallout. It's not, you know, the blast would be relatively the same as a truck bomb going off. It would be like, you know, Tim McVeigh's bomb in Oklahoma City. It would take out, you know, nearby buildings, and that would be pretty much it. But there would be, if a nuclear device were to go off, radioactive stuff in the cloud, particularly if it was a dirty device, particularly if it was, you know, if they put the bomb and they packed it in, you know, packed 50 pounds of you know, cesium around it or something like that, or radioactive iodine, you know, medical waste, or something. It would, and that's, I think that's a big concern. And the problem is the fear. And that's what I was saying. You know, I was in Germany the week that the cloud, you know, just the week after Chernobyl melted down, as the cloud was floating over and the rains were coming down, and the entire city of Frankfurt was completely deserted. Sometime around May 7th, it was right in that week, and just, you know, that's the problem. Anyhow, Brad, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Good to hear from you, and thanks for the music as always. Our conservative alert. We'll use the Rush alert music. Let's do that.
Sending crimes, making money, selling lies. You might say everybody hates my guts.
Oh my!
Offensive. I'm a bigot.
Well, okay. It's
sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic cunts.
And now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this. They always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
Okay. All right, enough of that. This is more broad. This is broader than just this Bush Bimbaugh. Fox News. This is really something interesting, this report. Redefining reality. I mean, I actually know people who watch Fox News and think that they're getting the news. It's, yeah, really. And, okay, for example, Brit Hume on January 16th says that Enron has nothing to do with Bush's energy policy. Right? I mean, we have found out now, of course, that Enron wrote Bush's energy policy. Kenny Boy Lay and his good buddies were there with Dick Cheney in the White House, having the meeting, putting the thing together. But no, Brit Hume says that despite the White House coordinating its energy policy with Enron's Ken Lay during the energy crisis, he says Enron, quote, is not a scandal about the Bush energy policy, end quote. Yeah. Well, and Fox reporter Brian Wilson wants you to know that everyone agrees that the tax cuts, so-called tax cuts, they're actually tax deferrals. Your children will pay this bill, plus interest. George Bush's so-called tax cuts helped everybody, right? Fox News correspondent Brian Wilson on March 5th of this year says, quote, a lot of people are doing their taxes right now and seeing the benefits of that kind of tax cuts that's in the system. Last time, everybody will have to agree, it did generate quite a little bump in the economy. End of quote. Folks at the Center for American Progress point out he said this despite Fox News' own September 2003 poll showing that 61% of Americans believe tax cuts have not helped their families' finances. Oh, but Brian Wilson says everybody agrees. No, no. Your own poll shows 61% of Americans don't. And a January New York Times poll finding, quote, fewer than one in five people say their tax burden has been eased, end quote. But, you know, reality? Bill O'Reilly, July 22nd of last year, despite questions about Bush's Iraq policy, Bill O'Reilly says, Americans are looking for a strong leader. Mr. Bush has been that, and most Americans had emotion invested in him. He did exactly the right thing after 9/11, end quote. This is, well, yeah, okay. I'll give you, Bill O'Reilly doesn't pretend to be a reporter. I mean, you know, he pretends to have gotten an award as a reporter, but he doesn't really pretend to be in a room. You know, everybody knows. He's there offering his opinions. And he calls it no spin. Okay. Let's go back to a Fox anchor. Yeah, this is somebody actually pretending to be a news reporter. Tony Snow. Despite burgeoning violence in Iraq, and the Fox News Sunday host Tony Snow says Bush's Iraq policy, quote, has created peaceful conditions in more than 90% of Iraq, end quote. Really, Tony? What's the source of your statistics? no response. No statistics cited. No source. I guess, you know, make things up. Do what works. This is the foe of faux news, right? Fox anchor and reporter spins Bush's education policy. Despite the prospect that Bush would propose reducing education funding, Fox's, according to the Center for American Progress, Fox's Jim Angle reported, quote, Bush seems to see education reform as the next big front in the battle for civil rights. And, of course, it will be the number one priority once he takes office. Now, this was just before Bush was coronated. When asked about Bush's clear plan to push for vouchers, Angle said, well, it's a mischaracterization, obviously, of his education plan. The truth is not the truth. It's a mischaracterization. Don't look at that man behind the curtain. Fox Hannity spews this, again, the Center for American Progress, unsubstantiated lies about Iraq. Fox's Sean Hannity claimed, quote, we now have documents proving the connection between al-Qaeda and Iran, but that's not enough to convince people. We had weapons dumped in the Euphrates. That's not enough to convince people. He produced no evidence of his assertions, and his assertions have never been substantiated. But, you know, hey, it's Fox. Who, you know, what do you expect? Okay. Here, how about the union policies? We'll go back to one of their news reporters, Neil Cavuto. President John Sweeney, Fox anchored Neil Cavuto, claimed Republicans' anti-union agenda was acceptable because it represented, quote, a view of individual worker spirits, a boundary-less type of environment where managers can talk directly to workers rather than through an intermediary like unions. Say what? Yes, isn't it great? Managers can say to workers, no, you can't be a member of that union, and if you speak like that again, you're fired. Or whatever. And a Fox reporter says public supports right-wing economics. Carl Cameron. Now, this, you know, the polls show that almost 70% of Americans, 69%, the exact number, Nearly, you know, 7 out of 10 Americans say that the economy under George Bush is either not so good or poor. Nonetheless, Carl Cameron reports on Fox News, quote, most polls show that the public prefers the Republican economic approach over that of the Democrats, end quote. Cameron also did not mention polling around the same time that showed 62% of Americans believed the Bush tax cuts did nothing or hurt the economy. So, our conservative alert for the day. Actually, you know, I want to even dig a little deeper into this thing. I think this is fascinating, this thing about John Edwards is the fourth most liberal United States senator. It's really interesting how this came about. I'll share that with you in just a second. Let's go to the phones. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Hey, Tom, sorry to call you twice, but I'm a scientist and I got to point something out. You know, okay. They always say figures don't lie, but liars can figure.
Sure.
It's a beautiful thing. Of course 90% of Iraq has been pacified geographically. It's mostly desert. There's nothing there.
Ah, there you go, Chuck. You've let me ring the bell. Bong, bong, bong. You've figured it out. Yes, 90% of Iraq, there is no fighting because it's desert and there's nobody there. Brilliant. Thanks, Chuck. Good to hear from you. Well said. And pithy and punchy at that. Boy, you get 3 stars today. Okay, following the announcement that John Edwards was picked to be John Kerry's vice presidential running mate, conservative media echoed Republican talking points on Edwards' record, parroting their label of Edwards as the fourth most liberal member of the Senate. In fact, and despite of the fact that this rating is based on only 40 Senate votes from one session of Congress. This is, you know, really fascinating. The Republican National Committee, headed up by fired Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie. Only in America could you be a lobbyist for Enron making $700,000 a year, get fired from your job, and get hired to be the head of the Republican National Committee. Only in America. I mean, it's wonderful, really, in a way. I mean, this really and truly is the land of opportunity. Yeah, I'm being facetious, of course. It's really the land of kleptocracy. What has happened is, see, this Eisenhower wouldn't have put up with this. I don't think Barry Goldwater would have put up with this. This is the kind of stuff that started with the so-called Reagan Revolution. Corporate cronyism, handing the keys of government over to huge multinational corporations in exchange for huge contributions, and you know, providing cover and fire in the media and whatnot, and advancing the so-called conservative revolution. So anyhow, here's this report that the Republican National Committee comes out with. It's called Edwards' Record, However, Reveals Liberal Truth, and it says that he's the fourth most liberal senator in 2003, ignoring key information from the National Journal's vote ratings based on his 5 years in the Senate. You know, his 2003 National Journal voter rating, which gave him a liberal rating of 94.5%. Again, I would love to know what liberal means to these guys. I mean, it means anything that opposes the administration, among other things. It was based on only 40 votes from one session of Congress and is not representative of his voting record, in which he has cast over 1,000 votes. Edwards' average liberal rating for the 5 years he has served in the Senate from 1999 to 2003 is actually 75.7%, 20 points lower than his 2003 rating, which the Republicans are touting. Now, you know, on the one hand, I'm kind of disappointed. He's not really the fourth most liberal senator in the United States Senate. He's like number 26. But on the other hand, I'm also just amazed. You know, here's Rush Limbaugh. Edwards is the fourth highest ranked liberal in the Senate. Kerry is the first. No, not true. Sean Hannity. Kerry is the number one liberal in the Senate. Edwards is number four. No, sorry, not true. Carl Cameron on Fox, same thing. You know, it's the talking point gets repeated until people believe it. That's their way. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. A new study published in the Journal of Health Affairs shows that registered nurses, like truck drivers, airline pilots, and doctors, make more mistakes when they work longer than 12 hours at a time. Kalia Ramirez speaks with the spokesperson for the California Nurses Association.
The study shows that RNs working 12 and a half hours and more are 3 times more likely to commit an error than nurses who work less than 8.5 hours. The study also shows that the risk to patients grows exponentially when RNs are forced to work shifts of 16, 20, and 24 hours. The research was led by nursing educators at the University of Pennsylvania and the Nursing College at Michigan's Grand Valley State University. Liz Jacobs, RN, a spokesperson for the California Nurses Association, the CNA, says that patient falls are a problem when nurses are tired, but
medication errors are by far the most common error when you're tired and you're trying to calculate. Look at small writing to make sure that the patient's name matches up with the name that's on the medication. Also getting medications in a timely manner, getting pain medications. Those are the kind of things that are the most prevalent when a nurse is fatigued.
Jacobs says the CNA thinks mandatory overtime is unnecessary.
We believe that mandatory overtime is poor planning.
In a press release welcoming the study, CNA Executive Director Roseanne DeMoro said the nurses' union had successfully negotiated tough bans on mandatory overtime at some 165 health care facilities in California. The study is published in the journal Health Affairs. More results, including reports on nurses' caffeine consumption, will be published in the fall. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Kelia Ramirez.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Yeah, I was talking about freedom. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 4.5 minutes before the hour. Ron Reagan, the son of the former president, has said that he will give a speech before the Democratic National Convention. He was invited, apparently, to participate in a Ronald Reagan memorial hoop-de-doop and shindig at the Republican National Convention, and he has said no, he wouldn't show up, even though it was honoring his father, for fear that people might interpret it, some Republicans might interpret it, as an endorsement of George W. Bush or anything that his administration is doing. What is it that has got that has the son of the former president so upset? It's this whole stem cell research thing. It's what's amazing to me is how few Americans actually understand this. The embryonic stem cells, that is, stem cells which come from embryos, that come from fertilized human eggs, the reason is obvious, that the reason is disinformation, because of an aggressive disinformation campaign by the religious Reich. There is this widespread perception that in order to get fetal stem cells, you have to have an abortion. And in fact, the place where most of these stem cells come from has nothing to do with abortion whatsoever. In fact, all of them come from. Nobody's taking stem cells from abortions. Nobody. Nobody's even suggesting that. Here's where they come from. You've got millions of people every year who go in for in vitro fertilization in the United States. And what they do is they stick a needle through the woman's belly into her ovaries, and they pull out through that needle a couple thousand ovum, the eggs. I mean, there's millions of them in there. And they put them in a petri dish, and then they get some sperm from the guy, and they put it in there with them, and they notice, okay, we got a couple hundred of them here are fertilized. And then they pick out the two or three that seem to be the most enthusiastically growing. And they implant them in the woman's womb, in her uterus. And boom, you've got a baby. Now, what are they going to do with the rest of them on the petri dish? Those are your embryonic stem cells, right there. They throw them away. That's what they do with them right now. They throw them away. And all Ron Reagan is saying is, instead of throwing them away, why not use them for research? We're not talking about having them grow into being babies or fetuses or anything larger than the head of a pin. Anyway. I rant. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks to Louise for producing our program. Thanks to Ira Gravett for engineering it. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet. Thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics. Thanks to Mike Toth and Ben. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. And thanks to you. Thanks to Jay for our music. Thanks to you. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture. culture's blind behavior and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in book.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.